Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Potomac Perspective. I'm Neil Shapiro, head of corporate communications at Stifel, joined as always by our chief Washington policy strategist, Brian Gardner. Hey, Brian.
Good morning, Neil. It's good to be with you. It was great to see you and so many of our Stifel colleagues out at Stifel Blueprint, which for clients and non-Stifel folks, it's an internal gathering of our financial advisors and people from across the platform. It was great to be with everybody, including yourself.
I agree. It was good to see you, Brian, and it was good to see a lot of our advisor listeners. So we appreciate the support, and it was always great to meet the folks and see what's going on across the country. We have offices all over the United States, so it's always good to get the pulse from various areas of the country.
Absolutely. People we have, advisors we've met over the years, and some new folks that we met out there. It's a great event.
Yep. Always fun.
Yep.
So we appreciate the support from all of our internal listeners, from inside of Stifel, and of course, from everyone that listens outside of Stifel. All right, Brian, so let's kick it off. A bunch of things going on. Why don't we start with the FDIC? There was some news, we're recording this on a Tuesday, but there was some news yesterday that we could potentially see a new chair of the FDIC. So why don't you explain what's going on there, whether we will see a new head of the FDIC, when that might happen, and what the ramifications could be?
Yeah, so yesterday afternoon, like you said, we're recording on a Tuesday. So yesterday afternoon, Monday, the head of the FDIC, Martin Gruenberg, announced that he is willing to step down once somebody is confirmed to fill his spot at the FDIC's board. This comes in the wake of a hearing last week with all the banking regulators, but a lot of focus was on Gruenberg because there's been some recent press reports and a report commissioned by the FDIC about workplace culture issues at the FDIC. The feeling after last week's hearing was that Gruenberg didn't handle it particularly well. And by the way, he's been there a long time as vice chairman, chairman, vice chairman, and chairman again. A lot that's happened at the FDIC has gone on his during his watch. But there was a feeling that his position at the FDIC is undermined and that he needed to go. Now, this is a lot of this is Washington, at its very best theater. So a statement came out yesterday morning from Senate Banking Committee Chairman Sherrod Brown, calling on the Biden administration to nominate somebody new. Didn't call on for his resignation, for Gruenberg's resignation. And Gruenberg's statement yesterday said that, did not say that he is resigning. He said he'd step aside when somebody is confirmed by the Senate to replace him. And the reason is, if he were to step down today or tomorrow, he would be replaced by the vice chairman, who would become the acting chairman. And that's a Republican, Travis Hill. And the FDIC would be deadlocked at 2-2, and the regulatory agenda would be stalled. And Democrats don't want that for obvious reasons. But they do see Gruenberg, I think, as being a political liability at this point. So there is a move to, at least on the surface, replace him. But getting that done is going to be really, really difficult. I mean, we're talking before Memorial Day, but in Washington terms, we're really in June. And then June goes by pretty quickly, a lot to do in June. You get to the end of the month and Congress will be off for 2 weeks. The Senate will be off for 2 weeks related to the July 4th break. And then the Republicans have their convention in the middle of July. So the Senate will be out of session for that. Well, the next thing you turn around, it's August.
Yeah.
And August recess, especially in an election year, they're not going to touch that. So the Senate doesn't come back until Labor Day and has a couple of weeks to finish up some things before breaking for the campaign. And look, I love financial services policy, having worked in it for a long time. I think it's important. I think it's fascinating, interesting. But at the same time, the political world does not revolve around financial services and the FDIC. So the idea that the Senate is going to spend precious floor time on the head of the FDIC when there are other pressing matters, I think is short-sighted by a lot of people. So I would not be surprised if Gruenberg remains on the job through the end of the year. Matter of fact, I would be a little surprised if that's not the case.
So does that mean that he's, well, I mean, so basically he's a lame duck, though.
I mean, lame duck, yes and no. But he still has control of the board. He has two other Democratic nominees, the comptroller of the currency and the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They both sit on the FDIC's board. And so he can work with them. They're both Democratic appointees. He can work with them to push forward on the agenda. Now, the agenda items they're working on are complex issues involving other agencies, including the OCC and the Federal Reserve Board. So getting three agencies to agree on everything is difficult. So he has challenges ahead of him in completing regulatory agenda items, but it's more because they're complex items, not so much that he's a lame duck.
Got it. Okay. Sticking on Capitol Hill, Congress, we've got two bills coming up for vote, two crypto bills coming up for votes this week. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a little bit like a old crypto week. I mean, there's actually a number of things going on in crypto world. So you mentioned the House is going to vote on two bills. One is called the FIT 21, which is a market structure bill. How do the regulators oversee the world of digital assets? What assets are regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission? What products and services are regulated by the Commodities and Futures Trading Commission, the CFTC? What the process is for registration and issuance to the public of these assets? Now, this bill is not going to go far in the Senate. There's little bipartisan consensus on the Senate side. I expect it will pass the House and with some Democratic support, but I don't think that signals good chances in the Senate. But this is still kind of an important step politically, legislatively, because these types of bills can often take years to pass. And just by getting it to the House floor, debating some amendments, working through some issues, you're clearing the brush a little bit, and you're possibly setting up the bill to be passed in the next Congress. So yeah, in the short term, very little is going to happen, but longer term, I think this is a positive step. The second bill would basically prohibit the Federal Reserve or any other government agency, but the Federal Reserve from creating a central bank digital currency, a CBDC. It's a very controversial topic. Other central banks around the world have created their own digital currencies. There are a lot of privacy issues in the United States that are concerning to a lot of savers, investors, voters. And so previous to this, the head of the Federal Reserve, Jay Powell, has said that the Fed is not close to creating a CBDC. And two, if they were, they would want a sign from Congress that they could go ahead. So this is pretty much a signal that Congress is not on board. At least the House is not on board. So I think it's an important political signal, even though it won't go anywhere. And again, it won't go anywhere in the Senate.
Yep.
But telling the Fed that a majority of House members do not want a CBDC, the message will be received at the Fed.
Strong message. Yep.
Yep. Let me just tick off two other items kind of related to crypto. One, the Senate voted last week and the House before it to overturn an SEC rule on accounting issues related to crypto. It's called SAB 121. And it's an accounting bulletin from the SEC's accounting office. And it deals with accounting rules surrounding crypto. I'm not going to go deep in the weeds on this. We don't have enough time. It probably needs its own podcast. But it was surprising because it did. So this would overturn the SEC's accounting bulletin.
It was surprising because a number of Democrats flipped and supported it, even though the Biden administration has signaled that it would veto the resolution from Congress. And maybe it's not that surprising that those Senate Democrats did flip. Maybe it's because the White House issued the veto threat, because these senators can now kind of, you know, stay close with industry, vote with industry, and yet not worry about the bulletin, the accounting rule being overturned because Biden's going to veto it. So that, you know, it's one of those odd things in Washington where you think you have a free vote. You don't really care about the policy outcome. It's more about the politics. And I think the politics led folks to support it, but it's probably not going to be signed by the president. And then finally, on crypto ETFs, the SEC is working on applications regarding the Ethereum ETF, and that's getting close to a decision. And it's been interesting this week because there had been a consensus in Washington that the SEC was not going to approve this application. And suddenly the consensus has flipped. And so the consensus is now that that the SEC will in fact approve CTF. So that's something, you know, I think no one knows exactly how that plays out, but everybody is paying close attention to it. So yeah, lots going on in Washington this week, and, you know, following through from last week on crypto.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot going on in New York too.
Rumor has it, maybe Lower Manhattan?
Lower Manhattan, breaking news, just moments before we recorded the podcast, the Trump defense has rested in the hush money trial. So that means we're going to get closing arguments, I guess, next.
It also means the president's not going to test, the former president's not going to testify.
Correct. Well, I don't think it was expected that he would. I think most people.
With Donald Trump, I think most of us have come to expect the unexpected.
So, yeah, yes.
I think most lawyers,
the legal
attorneys had said that it would have been a bad strategic move. But again, it's Donald Trump. And so expect the unexpected. But this time, the expected did happen.
Right. So he's not testifying. The defense rested. We're going to get closing arguments, I guess, in the next coming days.
Closing arguments and some kind of behind the scenes discussions and arguments between counsel for both sides and the judge over jury instructions,
mm-hmm.
how the jury will be instructed to handle the case. There'll also probably be a motion to dismiss by the Trump defense team. I don't know which way that's going to go. Yeah, there certainly is a possibility that that the judge dismisses the case before giving it to the jury. It's not impossible.
Yeah, well, one way or the other, the case is going to come to a close, it would seem.
Correct.
So then the question becomes, how, if at all, does this impact the campaign? I mean, obviously, a lot will depend on what the outcome is, but it also will conceivably free Trump up a little bit. He won't be glued to New York 5 days a week for the trial anymore. So how do you see this playing out without knowing the outcome of the trial?
So let's for a second think about if he is found not guilty. I think he gets a little bump in the polls. By the way, he's been leading in the polls nationally in the key states consistently for 6 months, 7 months now. It's pretty remarkable how stable the Trump lead has been. There's been very few swings. Normally in a campaign, you see, you know, some back and forth. But this has been stable. Anyway, I think Trump gets a little bit of a bump in the polls, and that probably will recede a week or two after an acquittal. But like you said, he would be back out more on the campaign trail. And you know, that's good and bad for him. I mean, he's a great campaigner, a lot of energy. He will definitely excite his base by being out among them. You know, he is given to saying things that
go off script.
not just going off script, but saying things that will enrage the other side. You know, he has the ability to energize both sides, which is a rare trait in politics.
So to the extent that the Biden campaign has been suffering from a perceived lack of enthusiasm, having Trump back out there could actually help the Biden campaign a little bit by reminding Democratic voters why they dislike Donald Trump. That's the way that the past couple of campaigns have gone. And I think we see a repeat. If he is found guilty, which I think would be a surprise, I think my view is he's probably found not guilty. I think that's the consensus view. This has always been viewed as the weakest of the four prosecutions. And as we sit here the end of May, it looks right now like this will probably be the only case that goes to trial before the election. If he is found guilty, it depends on what he's found guilty of. From what I could pick up, it sounds like some of the federal election related charges it's going to be difficult to convict him on those.
Mm-hmm.
And those are felonies. But if he were to be convicted on I think politically, that's more serious. If he is found guilty only on the business records charges, I think those are misdemeanors. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that would be a big issue for him. I think it becomes a bit of a non-event for him. And I'm not sure that a conviction is going to really change the trajectory of the race all that much. I mean, we have to see. I mean, we have talked on prior podcasts that there has been some polling. Would you change your mind on the race between Trump and Biden if Trump is convicted? And there is a group of voters who said, yeah, they would switch from Trump to Biden. But until that actually happens, you don't know how voters are going to react.
Right.
It's one thing to tell a pollster that 4 or 5 months before an event, as opposed to when the event actually happens. So we'll see.
And you've also made the comment multiple times that there's not a lot of polling out about, asking people if he's acquitted.
Yeah.
Does that change your mind, which could benefit Trump? The other thing real quick on the election that we could raise, because we haven't talked about it since our last podcast, is the debate schedule.
Yes, actually, while we were coming back from Blueprint.
Super early. And you think it's kind of I don't want to say a Hail Mary because it's not that late, but it's kind of a way that you have been on the record as saying that you didn't think that there would even be debates.
Correct.
And now there is one. And this early, you think it might be sort of a way for Biden to potentially give a little jolt to his campaign.
Yeah, so there are a lot of cross currents here. So, for the last couple of weeks, when polls would come out showing Biden trailing Trump, the Biden campaign would respond by saying, oh, we don't believe those. That's not what our polling is showing. They never share their polls, but it's not what our polls are showing. Then they come out and say, oh, not only are we going to debate, we're going to debate really early.
Really early.
That suggests to me they're seeing something in their polling that is consistent with the national public polls and not what the narrative, consistent with the narrative that they've been handing the press, the spin they've been handing the press. So I think it is a sign of potential weakness by the Biden campaign. That being said, I think the Trump campaign has mishandled this because they have so downplayed Biden's mental capacity and fitness that just showing up could be a victory for him, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'll give you one more that has to worry the Biden people and could be beneficial to Trump. There is a history of incumbent presidents having a bad first debate.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Obama.
I mean, I can go back for it. Reagan in 84.
Yeah.
Bush 41 in 92.
Yeah.
Bush 43 in 04. Obama in 12. Trump you remember the first Trump debate against Biden? It wasn't good. He was so ginned up. Clearly over caffeinated. If Biden meets those ex, if his behavior and his analytic and debate abilities are consistent with the perception that he's too old for the job, this could be deadly. I mean, there's, you know, reinforcing that opinion is something that Biden would have a very difficult time recovering from.
Yeah, but I feel like, and I don't know if you agree, I feel like because it's so early, right, at the end of June, I guess, is the first one. I know they're talking about.
I know where you're going with this.
Well, maybe not. There's two ways I can go with it. Number one is, does it potentially, like, change the race for one of the candidates in the sense if it goes really poorly, does somebody get out of the race? But I was going to say, you know, by having it in June, it's kind of like a scratch-off in the sense that if you do really poorly, there's enough time to make up ground until November. And if you do really well, people could forget about it. So does it really all even itself out?
So that's where I thought you were going. Yeah. The ability to recover from a bad performance. I understand the theory, but this is a race where people have such deeply held views of both candidates because they're so well known to the public, having been on the national stage. You know, each one of them has been on a ballot for the last couple of cycles. So, this is Biden's fourth national campaign out of the last five cycles, and obviously Trump's third in a row. There's not a lot new to find out. So our view is going to change that much. I don't know. So there's that. On the first question that you brought up, look, we have talked about it before, that there's always a small possibility that right before the Democratic convention in August, that Biden could decide that he's not up for the job. Would a bad debate performance lead to that? Possibly. I'm not convinced of that, by the way. I mean, just because, you know, if we go back in time, you know, you and I have been talking about this for a year. And then when the special counsel's report came out, you know, I increased my odds of Biden dropping out from 20 to 40. That was clearly wrong because following that report, you had the State of the Union, which was followed up by a vigorous campaign swing by Biden. Yeah. So he was leaning into it. So so clearly he had a different response to the special counsel's office than the report was suggesting. So I'm not sure that a bad debate performance would lead him to the reconsideration that a lot of other people do. I will acknowledge there is a chance it does happen. Yeah. I just think it's a low probability.
Yeah. And again, it goes to your point of what you said before, which is Trump has set the bar so low for him, to your point, just showing up, even if he has a bad performance. But if he seems energetic, if he seems on the ball, that's a victory in itself because Trump has set the bar so low for Biden's performance expectations. So we'll see. So that's the end of June. And then there's a second one that they're talking about closer to the election, I believe, right?
You know, one of the reasons that the Biden campaign kind of has leaked out for wanting the change in the debate schedule, and I take them at their word on this, is that they didn't like the previous schedule of debates because you already had voters starting to vote. And so the debate, even the first debate in September, you had a couple of states go into early voting. So the impact of the debates were meaningless slight. By having an early debate, not only before early voting, but before the conventions, there's definitely a possibility that it could have an impact on early voters.
I sense a special edition of the podcast coming up.
You know, have you put in our request for media credentials to Milwaukee and Chicago?
Yeah, we should. No, but I mean even a special edition of the podcast coming up for the, on the debate eve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had more in mind the conventions themselves. I think we should be there. And
I agree. I think it's a no-brainer. Yeah. So we'll get working on that. All right. Well, Brian, I guess we're out of time for this episode, but thank you as always for bringing us the latest from Washington.
Thank you, Neil.
And thanks to everybody for listening, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks with another episode of Potomac Perspective. Take care.